Cutting Audio presents James Axler's Deathlands. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Terence Aselford, Nanette Savard, Timberlee Chanel, Kate Torrey, David Elias, and Mort Shelby. Deathlands 63, Devil Riders. Slowly, the wisps of electronic fog filling the Matrans unit faded to nothingness, and the seven people sprawled on the gateway floor began to stir. Stomachs heaving from their passage through the pre-dark transporter machine, the companions writhed in agony. It had been a bad jump, but unfortunately there was nothing to do but suffer through the nausea and pain until the after effects of the instantaneous journey eventually subsided.
Anybody hurt?
Ryan Carter held his sides against the racking pain in his belly. It felt as if fire ants were eating his guts, and his skin seemed to be moving about, shifting positions as if draped loosely over his aching bones.
I'm alive.
J.B. Dix knelt on the floor. An Uzi machine pistol hung at his side, and a pump-action S&W M4000 scatter gun was strapped across his backpack. A canvas bag lay on the floor alongside him. Fighting a tremor, he wiped a string of drool from his mouth with a cuff of his leather jacket.
Just not sure why after that slice of hell.
I hear you.
Ryan braced a scarred hand against the cool armaglass wall and forced himself to stand. A Steyr SSG-70 rifle was sticking out of his backpack, while a 9mm Sig Sauer pistol rode at his hip alongside an 18-inch long panga. Blinking hard to clear his vision, the one-eyed man could see that outside the Matrans unit was a hexagonal chamber with cream-colored walls laced with a gold lattice pattern. That scheme was unfamiliar, which meant they had never been to this redoubt before. The walls of each gateway in the network of underground installations were a different color, the purpose of which, the friends concluded, was to let a jumper know immediately where he or she landed. However, the color schemes were meaningless to the Outlanders. Leaning against a wall, Dr. Mildred Wyeth pulled a canvas satchel into her lap.
Here. Try this.
She fumbled to open the bag. Inside was an assortment of precious surgical tools. The physician was slowly building a collection of medical supplies, sterile water, plastic baggies filled with sterilized cloth, a jar of sulfur dust for wounds and such. Hardly little more than supermarket curatives back in her day, but enough to save a life in the shockscape known as the Deathlands. Extracting a canteen, Mildred screwed off the cap and took a healthy swig before passing it to a boy almost in his teenage years. Physician, heal thyself, she thought, waiting for the throbbing headache to ease. Sitting on his butt, an arm propped against the floor to keep himself upright, Dean Carter accepted the container and took a long drink, sloshing the fluid about in his mouth to try to cut the taste of bile before finally swallowing.
Oh, this tastes awful.
He made a face and handed the canteen over to a nearby woman with fiery red hair. Sitting with her legs folded, the woman was almost completely hidden by a shaggy bearskin coat. She threw back her head, revealing a face of inordinate beauty and eyes as green as the troubled sea. Her slim hand shook slightly as she raised the container and took several small sips from the battered canteen. Mildred brushed away the beaded plaits from her own face.
It's not supposed to be delicious, kiddo. It'll just calm your stomach enough so we won't puke our guts out from the jump sickness.
Needed for this one, that's for damn sure.
The red-haired woman, Christy Roth, then passed the canteen to a pale-skinned teenager crouched on his hands and knees. Snow-white hair cascading past his white face, Jack Lauren shook his head, ruby-red eyes narrowed to mere slits, as if the stubborn youth were fighting the jump sickness by sheer willpower. Jack always fared poorly after a jump and would usually get violently ill. This time seemed no better. He waved the drink away for the time being, and Christy handed the canteen to JB.
What's in this batch, Millie?
JB accepted the canteen, but took a sniff before he drank. Some of Mildred's brews worked pretty well, but others were totally useless. And one memorable batch actually made them feel worse afterward.
It's the last of the aspirins, some vitamins, mint, skag root, and a shot of brandy I've been saving for an emergency.
JB smiled at her.
Fair enough.
He took a deep drink. His churning stomach calmed almost instantly, and the headache cleared in only a few minutes. Feeling much better, he passed Ryan the canteen and reached into his shirt pocket to pull on his pair of wire-rimmed glasses. The wiry armorer always took them off as a precautionary measure. Just in the off chance he would ever fall to the floor after a jump, he wouldn't break the spectacles. Splashing a few drops of the liquid into his palm, Ryan wiped down his face before taking a swig, holding the concoction in his mouth for a moment to cut the metallic taste of the bad jump. As he swallowed, he scowled deeply at the Matrans unit. A sprawled form wearing an antique-style frock coat remained still, an ebony walking stick inches away from an outstretched hand. Warning signs immediately flashed in his mind.
Mildred, something might be wrong with Doc.
Grabbing her satchel, Mildred crawled over the floor and awkwardly rolled the silver-haired man onto his back to check the pulse in his neck with a fingertip. But the beat was strong and slow, with no sign of arrhythmia. The frilled shirt rose and fell as the old man breathed steadily.
He's fine. Just passed out from the jump.
Are the jumps going to get worse for us over the years?
Good question, Dean. Unfortunately, I have no idea. But let's hope not. A jump any worse than this one and we'll arrive as corpses.
JB straightened the fedora on his head in acknowledgement.
And besides, we haven't been...
Here the armorer fumbled for the right word, for the boy's sake, but then gave up and chose the truth.
Experimented on by the lunatics who built the redoubts, or tortured for years by an insane baron.
Sometimes I'm surprised that he's sane at all, poor thing.
Indeed, madam.
Doc Tanner slowly raised his head.
So am I. If any are truly sane these dark days.
Aw, stuff it, you old coot. You'll outlive all of us combined.
Mildred grinned at the old man. She always felt that adopting a tough gal attitude around Doc after these god-awful jumps could actually promote more toughness in him as well.
Perhaps I already have, and that is the problem from the start.
Then the old man shook as he violently coughed. But that subsided, and he gazed at the others with clear eyes after scanning his surroundings.
Cream and gold, I perceive. We have not been here before, my dear Ryan.
No, it's a new redoubt for us.
The one-eyed man tossed the canteen over to Mildred. Across the chamber, the physician made the catch and shoved the container into Doc's grasp.
Here, drink the jump juice. It'll do you a world of good.
Then someone else made it, madam, and not you. That is excellent news.
Shut up and drink.
Give me when done.
Jack finally stood up. The teen weaved slightly, but then the weakness passed, and he stood without hindrance. Taking a healthy swig of the brew of meds and roots, Professor Theophilus Algernon Tanner soon felt the universe slip into focus once more, and he passed the canteen over to the albino teen, who, after downing his share, recapped and returned it to the physician with a grateful nod. Smoothing the frilly front of his white shirt, Doc tightened his black string bow tie and used stiff fingers to try to control his unruly crop of silver-white hair. Although he was in reality only 38 years old, his forced journeys through time had visibly aged the man and scrambled his memory until often the past and the present mixed freely. With careful hands, Doc checked the massive blaster at his side to make sure none of the black powder charges had come loose in the jump. The .44-caliber Lamah was a Civil War revolver, carrying 9 chambers in the primary cylinder and a short 12-gauge barrel set under the main barrel. It was slow to load, but hit like a cannon. But even more important, the weapon was from Doc's own time period, a direct physical link to his lost home, and the family still waiting for him in the distant past.